I'm delighted to say this is another IPS teleclass, again supported by Paul Weber and Weber Training. I'm really grateful to him for providing this facility so that people outside of this room can be joining us for this session. And I'd like to thank particularly the sponsors of this session as well, who are Virox and Johnson Diversey. The presenter is Dr. Niels Wigglesworth, who's a specialist trainee in public health in Mersey Deanery, ex-nurse consultant at Salford, partly responsible for this meeting as a member of the Scientific Programme Committee, and Neil's going to be presenting on moving on from audit to quality improvement tools. So welcome, Neil.
Thank you, Martin, and thank you to my friends and colleagues on the Scientific Programme Committee and the board for asking me to speak this year. Thank you. I'm sure you must still be there, even though I can't see you. Thank you all for still being here for the graveyard slot at this year's conference. If you read my abstract, you'll have seen one of my favourite quotes, which is this one by Albert Einstein, and I'm not going to read it out to you again, as I'm sure you've already enjoyed it once. I would argue that we, as a community, and I'm counting myself as an infection prevention and control practitioner in this rather than my new job, which I don't really know anything about yet, that we, as a community, are guilty of doing just this. We are guilty of doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Amongst our weaponry, our armaments, as it were, traditionally have been education, you would agree, a great deal of education. The traditional audit approach, the traditional audit cycle, you're all familiar with. And to a certain extent, asking our colleagues repeatedly and repeatedly to work harder and be more diligent, do better. Is that fair, would you say? Did I tell you it was interactive? No. And none of these things are in and of themselves bad things. They all have their value, and they all sometimes have effects. And Dr. Jarvis has given us some good examples of that in his talk. But I would argue that over time, they haven't really demonstrated that they have provided us with genuinely transformational change to any significant degree, transformational and sustainable change. They're limited in terms of their effectiveness. So if that's the case, and you can argue with me about that in the questions, I guess, why should we change? Well, first of all, I think, and I believe we all believe, that healthcare-associated infection is if not the major patient safety issue of our times. And to a certain extent, and I realise this is a qualified statement, but nevertheless, we have scientific evidence for the interventions that are likely to lead to reduced healthcare-associated infections, at least for a number of them. Again, Dr. Jarvis has most eloquently told us about that in his presentation. So we know what to do. But repeatedly and over time and consistently, studies have demonstrated that this guidance does not get translated into clinical practice. So we don't know how to do it. And it's my belief that that is the role of quality improvement work and quality improvement approaches, is to tell us how to do it, or more precisely, for us to learn how to do it. So I have two objectives, both fairly broad, potentially, so I'm not going to say a lot of detail about either. There's going to be quite a broad brush coverage of both these points, but I'm going to do a very brief introduction to quality improvement for those who are not familiar with the notion, but without any real detail, so forgive me if you wanted a really detailed talk, come back next time. And then an introduction to the forthcoming IPS quality improvement tools and how they can serve as tools to the measurement of quality improvement, which is an important part of that whole approach. So first of all, a little bit of background. What is healthcare quality? There are many definitions. This is the one from the Institute of Medicine, which is fairly widely used and fairly widely accepted. It describes healthcare quality as care that is safe, effective, patient-centred, timely, equitable, and efficient. And these are, in many ways, complementary factors, and that they, in many ways, complement each other. When things are equitable, they're often efficient. When they're timely, they're often safe. These things are they don't stand alone. Having said that, in infection prevention and control, we tend to focus on safe and patient safety, and I think that's a reasonable thing to do in infection prevention and control. That is often considered to be synonymous with patient safety these days. So if that's quality, what is quality improvement? Well, again, there are a number of definitions, and I am choosing to use this one. You may choose to use others. I am talking today about the term used to describe the application in healthcare of a number of approaches first developed for the most part in manufacturing industry to improve the quality of their processes and the quality of their products. And you'll have heard lots of these before. This is not news to most of you, I'm sure. I'm going to give you some examples, but they're only examples. There are a number of other approaches and a number of other tools that you may know of and may be using in your practice. I'm not going to talk about any of them in detail, as each one would be a session in its own right. So they're just names for the purposes of this talk. Such tools, statistical process control, and Six Sigma, which Dr. Jarvis mentioned, the lean approach, which is encompassed in this country in the Productive Ward Programme, which some of you may be familiar with, and centrally, because it's the one I know the most about, arguably, if I know anything at all, the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's Model for Improvement, which is based on their three questions and the use of the plan, do, study, act cycles. As I say, I'm not going to actually talk about that in any detail at all. It's just these examples of these approaches. We've heard examples of other approaches and other tools that fit in with this whole approach this week. We've heard about care bundles, we've heard about safety checklists, and a number of other things that are used as part of this whole set, a toolkit of approaches to improve quality. For details and for more information, I would refer you back to your national and local patient safety programmes, which are established and are emerging very rapidly in all the areas in which you're working, in all the countries in which you're working, and also to a very good resource, which is the website of the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, IHI.org. What I am going to talk about, having said what I'm not going to talk about, are four principles which I believe underpin all of these approaches to a lesser or a greater extent. The first one is a system approach to changing healthcare. I'm sure you were listening to Yvonne Curran earlier in the week, who was talking about human error theory, and there's a difference between the approach of a theory that assumes that errors are down to individual actions and a system that assumes that errors are down to problems within the system. I'm using the word system too often there. All quality improvement approaches, I would argue, make the assumption that in order to improve quality, you have to change processes and change systems in healthcare, not attempt simply to tell people to work harder and be more diligent. Simply by telling people to work harder and be more diligent, you do not remove error from the system. System improvement has a number of factors to it. Broadly speaking, and again, I'm speaking quite broadly, system improvement seeks to prevent errors occurring within healthcare systems and processes. It seeks, where those errors do occur, that they are made visible, such that you see those errors occurring, hopefully, before they actually cause harm, because not all errors will lead to harm, as, again, Yvonne demonstrated quite eloquently in the Swiss cheese model of James Reason earlier in the week. So you make any error that does happen visible to the system such that it can be dealt with. And thirdly, to mitigate the harm that may be caused by any errors that do occur. The second of my principles, and this quote is from Deming, who is one of those Toyota people that Dr. Jarvis was referring to, one of the pioneers of industrial quality control systems from some years ago now. And Deming said that if I had to reduce my message for improvement, just a few words, I'd say it all had to do with reducing variation. And reducing variation is the opposite of improving reliability. So this is about improving the reliability of processes, whether those processes are care bundles for the insertion and management of central venous catheters, whether those processes are hand hygiene at the 5 moments. It's about making sure that when those things happen, they happen in the same way, reliably, the vast overwhelming majority of the time. And the approach within quality improvement, again, going back to my previous slide, is to design or redesign processes and systems such that when they are designed or redesigned, they then inherently have a high level of reliability and a low level of variability. And this does actually impact on, again, what Dr. Jarvis was saying about clinician personal choice and personal freedom, because it limits their personal freedom considerably if you make them do it exactly the same way every time. And when I say make them, I mean make the system such that that's what they do, not beat them with a stick. My third important principle is illustrated by this quote, which I'm sure a lot of you have heard before. This is from the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. It's not actually, it's from Langley et al., but they use it a great deal. All improvement will require change, but not all change will result in improvement. And this illustrates the principle of testing. And testing is fundamental to all quality improvement approach. Any change that you make, and again, our traditional approach to making change is what has been described as a sort of throw it out there and hope for the best approach. You know, so you put in place a system-wide change in one go and you hope that it works. Quality improvement takes the completely opposite view to that and says if you have a change to a process, whether that be a very small process or a larger process, you test that process perhaps on one member of staff for one shift, in one bay of one ward or one single room or whatever sort of facility, or one nursing home bay, whatever facility you work in, you test it in a very small scale way and you iron out the deficiencies in that process in a very small scale before you even consider spreading that to a larger number of situations. So you might go from, let's say it's a hospital ward, because I'm mostly a hospital nurse up to now until I've got this new job. If you test your change in one bay on one shift and it works, you might then test it on two bays, maybe three bays, and maybe the whole ward, but only once you've established that it works in those very small situations, that you iron out and you learn the process in detail in a very small scale situation before you try to spread that change widely around your organisation. The other feature of testing in quality improvement is that it's quick. It's a rapid process. So the main vehicle for this testing is the Plan, Do, Study, Act cycle, which I mentioned earlier, and that is meant to be a rapid testing cycle such that you're doing a test today, a test tomorrow, a test the day after. By the end of 2 weeks, you've done 10 tests. So you've looked at your process 10 times, and you find out the chinks in what you're doing 10 times. A very rapid process. Excuse me. The fourth, final, and most relevant to the rest of the talk principle that I'm going to mention is measurement. And clearly I'm here to talk to you about the quality improvement tools, and so this is Lord Kelvin, I hope. He looks a bit like Darwin, but I think it is Lord Kelvin. Lord Kelvin, the famous physicist, the eponymously named scale of temperature, the Kelvin scale named after him, and he said, to measure is to know. If you cannot measure it, you cannot improve it. And I'm sure you've heard those quotes before because they're very widely used, but I like them, so I'm using them again. So the features of measurement. First of all, what kinds of measurement do we need to improve healthcare quality? Well, we need measurement of outcome. We've had quite a bit of information during this conference on the measurement of infection rates and the surveillance of infection. Very, very important. The reason it's important, again, from a quality perspective, is not to see how badly we're doing and to bash us over the head with a big stick, but it is to be motivational, so that it's motivational to see your infection rates go down. And it's for organisations to map their progress on their improvement curve, to map the progress towards their organisational goals, to measure the outcome. So the outcome really is important at the very higher level in organisations. The board and the chief executive officer and the infection prevention and control committee or whatever organisational bodies you have in place want to know about the outcomes, want to see how the organisation is doing on its improvement journey. For teams, actually, at a clinical level, improving, making improvements in clinical care, what they need is measurement of structure and process. And I say that because, and again, you can argue this with me, but if your structures and processes are evidence-based and you can implement them reliably, such that you're sure they're happening the vast majority of the time, then the outcome will surely follow. If it doesn't, either the science is wrong or you're not really implementing them. So for the teams at the ward level, they need to measure structure and processes. And that's what the IPS quality improvement tools will seek to aid with relation to infection prevention and control, and I'll talk about them shortly. The other thing we measure in quality improvement is we measure what we call balancing measures, and balancing measures are where the change that you've instituted into your system, and remember everything I'm arguing is a system of some description, whether that change has an impact on another part of that system, generally speaking an adverse impact. Now, the easiest way to illustrate this is to use a non-infection prevention and control example, and the example is if you alter your system such that it reduces the length of stay for any given condition, let's say you change your system such that, I don't know, patients with MIs, myocardial infarctions, end up with a 2-day shorter length of stay because of how you manage them. What is the obvious balancing measure that says has that an adverse impact on the system? You measure your readmission rates for that same condition. Are you sending them home sooner, but they're all being readmitted 3 weeks later because it's too soon? That's a simple example of what a balancing measure seeks to do. It seeks to make sure you're not knocking the whole system out of kilter by the change that you make. The other thing about measurement, I really wanted to talk about in terms of sort of philosophically almost, is the purpose of measurement for the within quality improvement. We talk about measurement for improvement, and that means that the purpose of this measurement is for us all to learn, not to be judged. Now, I realise that in the real world, we are all judged and we are all measured and we will all be given performance measures and we will all have to meet them. However, for the purpose of quality improvement, we seek to measure to learn about the systems and processes such that we can then intervene to change them. That's the reason we're measuring. It's not to see how bad we are. It's nice to see how good you are sometimes, but it's not to see to say how badly we are doing. It's to learn something from that. And that learning, and I'm going slightly out of sequence here, forgive me, but that learning identifies the opportunities to make changes within systems and processes. If you measure the systems and processes clearly, carefully, you can see where there's an opportunity to make changes, and you might make those changes by implementing testing changes using a PDSA cycle, as I was talking about a few minutes ago. The sort of the features of measurement for improvement are, generally speaking, that measurement is we use rapid and sequential measures with simple results displayed on, for example, annotated run charts. And again, sorry, Dr. Jarvis, I keep doing this, but Dr. Jarvis showed you a most excellent example of that with the ventilator-associated pneumonia chart, where you had the chart of ventilator-associated pneumonia over time with annotations saying what had happened, what changes had been made at particular points in that progression, and that's the ideal vehicle for demonstrating process measures in many cases. And the other feature of process measures and the IPS quality improvement tools in particular, they measure, again, what I was talking about in terms of are we genuinely implementing the science that we believe will alter the outcome and reduce infection rates. So are we doing the work we're supposed to be doing in order to improve the outcomes that we're seeking to achieve? That's the reason for doing them. So my next slightly separate part of the talk, but you see hopefully how it connects, is to introduce you to the Infection Prevention Society Quality Improvement Tools for Infection Prevention and Control, which are being launched this year. A little history, very brief history. Many of you will know that the West Midlands, as ICNA as it was then, in fact ICNA Regional Group, I think it would have been in those days, and using old money terminology, produced audit tools, traditional audit tools for infection control in the 1990s. Nationally, the ICNA produced updated audit tools for infection prevention and control in the early 2000s, in more than one setting, updated those tools and produced them, and at that time produced them in an electronic version such that you could use them using computers and produce electronic reports, etc. In 2008, initially in England, the Department of Health agreed to support initially what was then the IPS to review the acute audit tools as they had been before. That was the original premise. We were to review the tools, the acute tools. A scoping exercise taken before the project started identified there was a need for a suite of tools, and we'll show you the outcome of that when I show you the scope of the work that's been going on to produce these tools. And IPS, fundamentally importantly at that time, recognised the need to support developing quality improvement approaches in healthcare in infection prevention and control by aiming our tools as tools that support measurement for improvement. So that has been a driving philosophy of the entire project, that these tools support measurement for improvement. Just a little more. The project to develop quality improvement tools then, as it became, then received support, and I think this is quite groundbreaking, received support from each of the five countries in which the Infection Prevention Society is represented. So all the countries, all the governments and administrations of the United Kingdom and the government of the Republic of Ireland all are actively supporting this project, actively and financially supporting this project. Little boring project structure, but you have to do it. The project structure is the project is led by a project board, which is comprised of the project lead, the Infection Prevention Society treasurer to deal with the financial aspects of the actual project, and representatives of those governments and administrations that are funding the actual project itself. Project has a steering group, which has group leads for each of the separate improvement tools that are being developed, as well as the project leader themselves. Expert advisors in quality improvement and in hand hygiene and other areas, and also involved the team from Thames Valley University to look at the evidence base for the work that we were doing to assist with the evidence base assessment. And then each of the tools themselves has been developed by tool development groups personed by IPS members from all over the five countries that in which we're represented. Lost a page, excuse me a second. The scope of the tools. This is what came from the scoping exercise as to what were the needs for what were then considered to be audit tools, but we believe there's a strong need for quality improvement tools. And I'll talk about the structure of the tools very shortly, but just for now, this is just the scope of the areas which the tools will cover. So there are those that are specific to certain healthcare settings. So there are some that are specific to acute and secondary care. Care homes, mental health and learning disabilities, theatres and endoscopy, and then there are clinical practice tools, which are very similar in many ways to the care bundles that you'll be familiar with, and they have a similar use and a similar approach to the care bundles that you're familiar with. I'd just like to point out the hand hygiene observation tool in particular has been produced in collaboration with the Royal Free University College team who do the hand hygiene observation tool previously, and is supported by the MPSA as well. That's a collaborative piece of work as part of the whole suite of tools. I won't read out all the clinical practice tools, but I'm sure you can read them on the list. The tool development process, we had a review of the available evidence, and the tools are evidence-based wherever evidence exists for them to be so based. We have had to use whatever levels of evidence we can use, but we've done a rigorous approach as we can to ensure that they're as evidence-based as possible. We made a very concerted decision early on to restrict the content of the tools to those elements which have an impact on reduction of healthcare-associated infection, not on the many and varied and various things that previously infection control nurses have got involved in. This is about healthcare-associated infection only, so it doesn't, for example, necessarily deal with some aspects of waste management, etc., which are not don't cause healthcare-associated infections, although I'm not saying they're unimportant. The tools were then tested in practice. The tool development teams tested the tools once they were initially drafted and developed using that PDSA quality improvement approach that I've been describing, well, I haven't been describing, but I've been alluding to throughout the talk. So these tools have been tested using that rapid sequence, small-scale testing approach for their usability, not for their evidence base. We know what to do. We don't know how to do it. So we've been trying to test them to make sure they can be used. They can really be used in real clinical settings, and they're really useful to clinical practitioners. And we've had... And then we have a wider consultation with stakeholders, which is in progress or about to be in progress. So, in fact, this is the tool structure. Each tool has two components. A process improvement tool, what we've called a process improvement tool, is actually a structure and process improvement tool in some cases, but that sounds like a spit. So we're calling them all a process improvement tool or a PIT. And a rapid improvement tool or a RIT. And the difference between these is that the process improvement tool is a detailed, almost forensic examination of the area of practice or the area in which the practice happens. It's a very detailed tool that might be used for a baseline assessment or for a detailed examination of the process at length. That's not a rapid, quick tool to use every day. The rapid improvement tool is exactly that. It's a rapid tool with only the very most important, highly evidence-based aspects of the area of practice, including a very small number of points in which to test and measure, such that it can be used rapidly and frequently and by people at the clinical interface, by nurses, doctors, healthcare workers, whoever, at the clinical interface. These are tools for rapid measurement and rapid improvement. To go with this suite of tools, there's an electronic database. I won't go into a lot of detail. This is still being developed, and you may have seen the beta version that's been available on the PS Management System stand at the conference this week. They've had a beta version on the stand for them to people to see. You can conduct measurement using any of the tools in the suite from this database and produce reports. It has a pick-and-mix facility such that you can bespoke these tools, so that you can create bespoke tools using elements of all the available tools to produce them that's ideally suited to your context. And again, context is important to quality improvement. You improve it within the context in which you work. They're compatible with the NHS IT systems and non-NHS IT as far as can humanly be possible. There are multiple methods for data entry. It's designed for essentially potentially web-enabled system or intranet-enabled system, depending on whether you've got a small facility or a large facility. It can be hosted external to your organisation or within your organisation. There's also a PDA data entry system as well. It's been developed by the people who actually developed the credits for cleaning system, if those of you are familiar with that. It's the same company that developed this piece of work, and they're very familiar with PDA entry work. They do a lot of it with that system. It has built-in reports to support quality improvement, so it has standard reports about what the questions were, what the answers were, all the things you need to know. It also has the ability to provide us with run charts, annotated run charts, etc. It's compatible with the credits for cleaning system, and if you have both systems, you'll be able to upload information from one to the other in terms of your organisational structure and physical structure of your buildings, etc. And there will be support and training available for this beyond its initial launch. That's outside the IPS. That's PS Management's approach, and they will be doing that at a charge. So you can run it yourselves, or you can run it with help at a charge. So I have some conclusions as my red light is flashing. Infection prevention is central to patient safety. Quality improvement approaches, in my view, and I'll say it as my view, offer the opportunity of transformational change in infection prevention and control. Measurement for improvement is a requisite of any quality improvement approach that you choose to take, and the IPS tools will hopefully support measurement for improvement, hence the talk in the order that it's in. And we expect the launch of those tools towards the end of 2009. I'd like to acknowledge the people who funded the work, the governments and administrations of the UK countries and the Republic of Ireland, our colleagues in the Royal Free University College School of Medicine and the National Patient Safety Agency who have been collaboratively working with us, the steering group and tool development group members and the many other people who have contributed to this work, and the IPS board for its support throughout this work. I'm only speaking on behalf of the team that have done this work, just one person, and the team is quite large, and this is just some of the people that have been working on this project. Thank you very much.